You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. For some reason, he just, as soon as I say I'm going to get a guest, he just kind of runs in the opposite direction. So our guests always come up and they always say, like, hey, well, come every time I'm on the show, it's never with Harrison. It's really for that reason. He's just afraid of everybody. But I am happy to be joined by Matt Moore of Hardwood Paroxysm and now of the Action Network. It's at Action Network HQ and actionnetwork.com. Matt, thank you very much for joining us. How was the holidays for you?
It was good. I went to Breckenridge and hung out with the family. We got a little cabin up there and enjoyed that. And I'm glad to be on this podcast with you. And, you know, all I have to say is, Harrison, face me, you coward.
He's definitely going to mention all of this good stuff. The other thing, so I've noticed every so often on your Twitter timeline, I saw that one of the projects that you did up there in Denver was attempting one of the workouts that the Denver Nuggets put together. I just went to the gym for the first time today, and usually I'm not really kind of the guy who criticizes effort and that stuff because that feels intangible, but I am never doing that ever again, considering I had the Rasheed Wallace three-point line thing going strong tonight. It was something to behold.
Go ahead. Yeah, the Nuggets thing was wild. That was crazy. We're gonna do it again next year. I think we're gonna do like a charity event in Denver. It was just so much fun. Like, we got the actual workout that the Nuggets do at Red Rocks Amphitheater, which is this – it's at elevation. There's this crazy amount of stairs. It's just like berserk. And for some reason, we decided to do it. And it was actually a lot of fun. Like, for something that was so physically grueling, it was a lot of fun to do.
What percentage of the workout did you get through? Did you get through all of it?
No. So we, like – our whole objective was to – get through a third of it. That's how intense it is. Like, it's crazy.
That's insane.
And I got through a third of it, so like, mission accomplished. But it's like up down, up down, up down. There are these giant pillars that you're supposed to do wall jumps up. It's a crazy amount where you're supposed to do like defensive slides across every step going up. There's like 16 reps to this thing, and it is absolutely just absurd. And the Nuggets do it every year, and every year, like, Darrell Arthur has done it, like, I guess now 4 years in a row. And I asked him before we went out there, I was like, hey, so have you ever gotten sick? And he's like, oh, yeah. he's like, I threw up 2 weeks ago. And I was like, okay, thanks. Appreciate that. It was really tough, but I'm actually looking forward to doing it again next summer. I'm going to try and do maybe half of it. I'm going to start training for it and actually do it. And, like, I'm not a fit person. And so, like, my if you did me for time, my performance on these would be wretched and abysmal. But it was just trying to get up all the stairs in the amphitheater, and it was just crazy. The nice thing about it is it put into perspective how amazing the athletes are in the NBA. Like, they're just – too often dudes are like, well, I could do that. Like, there's just too much of that out there. It's like, oh, you should be able to do that. And it's like, you have no idea the condition these guys are in. You have no clue how good a condition they're in.
It's funny because I do get that a lot because of the area that I live in and because of some of the people that I hang out with. You get a lot of like the, oh, they're just naturally talented. I'm like, yeah, there's some of that, sure. But the conditioning that these guys do is absolutely insane. Also insane is this undertaking that you're going with, the Action Network, and you left CBS, and that was honestly one of the number one reasons I wanted to bring you on here, just because it sounds like a really exciting project, and I wanted to give you a platform to be able to speak on it a little bit.
Yeah, so you know, Action Network started. It's a new venture that is kind of, the headline of it is that it's focused on fantasy and gambling analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think of it, you know, all of this, of the major media sites, CBS, ESPN, Yahoo, all of these sites have started doing, like, obviously fantasy has always been a big part of what they do. And if you work at any of those companies, what you find out very quickly is that fantasy is like a major, it pays your bills.
Yep.
Like, fantasy is a huge reason why they're able to provide all that content. And so I don't look at what Action Network is doing as anything more than putting up front what fans really are kind of most interested in nowadays anyway. Like, all the analysis that we do and the smart, awesome fans that we have, I think that there's room in there for that. But there is a crossover so much with fantasy and gambling. And I've always thought gambling was just fascinating. Just mm-hmm. the idea of these lines and, like, the numbers that are involved in them and how they're adjusted depending on where the money's coming in and how often they're on target. And just tracking that stuff is really fascinating to me. And so I was approached, and they just came to me and said, hey, you know, we have this new thing going, and we really need you. And I'm like, well, what do you need me for? And they say, all we want is for you to make NBA fans smarter. They're like... We want what you're doing now. We just want you to do it for us.
So, and they want you to be the opposite of TNT.
Oh, harsh. You know, there are times when
every
TNT,
so often.
Especially, like, I think Reggie Miller is, like, here's a problem with Reggie. He's like, Reggie says, like, 9 bad things, and then he'll say, like, 3 things where I'm like, that's a really great point. Just focus on those things. Yeah. Just do those things.
I want more Brent Berry in my life, honestly.
Yeah, Brent Berry's amazing.
So much better.
Bones. So that's kind of what my objective is. I'm doing the same stuff that I've been doing throughout my career, just somewhere else, and honestly with some more resources. So I'm going to be doing some traveling and doing some original reporting and doing all this stuff. And, you know, we're really excited about it. You can sign up for the newsletter at actionnetwork.com. And, you know, we hope you'll come along for the ride. It's going to be pretty great. We're going to try stuff and it's going to be adventurous, and I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, it goes without saying that for those of you listening to this show right now, this show probably doesn't exist without the foundation that you helped lay all those years back with Hardwood Paroxysm, and then the blogosphere that kind of expanded from there with some help from True Hoop, and then SB Nation kind of hopped on for the ride as well. I want to make sure that every resource that Harrison and I have, we want to try to do whatever we can to help get the word out there for you in this endeavor. It sounds really exciting. And if it means that basketball fans get smarter, all the better from us. Although that means I have to keep up, which is terrifying. So,
you know, it's funny. Your old site, Silver Screen and Roll.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know I named that site?
Yeah, that's what Drew told me about that. I was like, because originally I thought it was Kurt Heelan, but he was 4 in Blue and Gold. And then Drew said, no, that was Matt Moore. What does Silver Screen and Roll, like, what does it mean?
Oh, so basically, Matt from Bloggable, who for years ran SB Nation NBA, I had worked with him on trying to get a couple of things together from time to time. And I actually started Ridiculous Upside, the D-League and Draft Blog that's there now.
Mm-hmm.
And he had always said, like, well, I really like puns. I just think that they're clever, like, they're clever uses of the site. And so the guy that started it, Josh Clark, and I were talking, going back and forth. And all of a sudden, I had it one night. I texted him in, like, a frenzy. I was like, I got it. Because I was thinking, like, I was like, silver screen. I was like, Silver Screen and Roll.
So, like, the Hollywood thing.
Yeah, so I was, like, super excited about it. I was like, this is amazing.
Gotcha, because for some reason I never connected those two dots, and I just thought, like, this seems better for San Antonio. But now that I've connected those two dots, then it makes a ton of sense. We are going to take a quick break, and then in the latter parts of the show, we are going to talk about Lonzo Ball and the conversation that has – frankly, gotten a little smarter. I thought it was insane there for a bit. You couldn't talk about it at all. And then now I think everybody's kind of mellowed out because there's so much else going around the NBA. So we're going to talk about Lonzo. And then I'm sure you, Matt, have some thoughts on the way Luke Walton is treating Julius Randle and what is in store for him, what might be the best path forward for everybody involved. So that's how that's going to go. Make sure you guys are following the show, by the way, on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Let's get to it. All right, so the Lonzo stuff, it initially was just utterly insane. People had they planted their flags, and either you hated Lonzo or you were an outright stan, and there were shades of gray in between, but they tended to be fairly black and white. And I'm not saying that you were anti-Lonzo, because one thing I do credit you for is that I really do get the sense that at the end of the day, you're rooting for all of these guys to succeed. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case with some of the post-draft coverage of guys. I get the sense, and what frustrates me sometimes is that you get some people out there rooting against players that they thought they maybe thought weren't going to be very good. And if those guys turn out to be good and you didn't like them coming out of the draft, well, then you wind up being wrong. And for whatever reason, predictions can't be wrong, even though they're completely random, in my opinion. But have you noticed, because I've started to notice, that things have kind of calmed down on the Lonzo front?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think that you know, obviously he's had a good stretch of games, and that's helped things considerably. And I think everybody's kind of getting tired of it. The injury, him being out, is part of it. But I mean, I think it's going to continue. I think that this is always going to be a thing, because when he has a bad game, people are going to say he had a bad game. And as soon as somebody says he had a bad game, people are going to reply with, "Oh yeah, well he's really young and he'll get it together, don't you think?" As if that's what was asked. That's like, that's not what I was talking about. I wasn't talking about whether or not he's going to have a good career. I was talking about whether or not he had a good game or not. And then when he has an awesome game, those people are going to say, "Oh yeah, what's up now? Told you, high five."
I might send out that tweet.
And you know, and those of us that are just trying to be honest and objective about this are going to say, like, "Well, no, like, he had a good night. He had a good run. He's had a nice 10 games, but that doesn't pretend anything." And really what it comes down to with me is this. I've actually said, and I've said this on Twitter and I've said this in posts, his shooting is not a big concern to me. It's just not. Because if you look, historically, great shooters, a lot of those guys, their rookie seasons had bad shooting seasons. Mm-hmm. It's just, when you're a rookie, you're not going to shoot well. There are things with his release which are legitimately problematic and hard to build a sustainable, consistent shooting form, which is how you get good. It's hard to shoot the way that he does every single time. He can shoot for these 10-game stretches, sure, but when you look at it, it's like, oh yeah, well, he's shooting 37% in the last 10 games. How about that? And it's like, all right, well, that's 34 shots. That's 34 shots. That's like half a warm-up. Like, it's just not a big deal. And it's not that it doesn't matter. It does. Like, it does matter. He is getting better. And maybe he'll continue to improve. But you can't just sit there and, like, plant the flag and say, victory has been achieved. Peace in our time. Like, no, it's not over. Just as, you know, if you think that, like, I look at the plus-minus stuff and I'm like, well, he's a negative. I can't be like, well, he's always going to be a bad player. Like, that's clearly not true. Lots of rookies are bad. Like, my thing is, let bad rookies be bad. And he's been a bad rookie. My biggest problem is I will not tolerate this narrative that's like, he just makes everybody around him better. He just when he's on the court, like, everyone just passes. Like, no! He makes simple, basic passes about 90% of the time. And to their credit, the Lakers have played really well. The reason the Lakers have been competitive, even though their record is actually terrible, is because of their defense and because of Brandon Ingram. Credit those things. Let Lonzo be bad. And when Lonzo's good, then we can talk about Lonzo being good. And that's like the worst part about all this, is if you ask me, like, in a year, where's Lonzo going to be? I'd be like, he's probably going to be pretty good. But in a year, I'm going to be having Lakers fans invading my mentions talking about What now? What's up now? You thought he was going to be the worst player in the league and be in China. And I'm like, that's not at all what I said.
I want to know whose voice this is, that, like, which account's voice this is, who speaks or tweets this way, because it might honestly be Lakers Outsiders, because Lakers Outsiders, like, I'll jump on there every so often and be a little extra snarky.
It's just I think for me, all I want is for us to be honest in these conversations. Like, let's just present things honestly. It's okay for fans to be excited about him. The kid's really fun to watch. Like, his rebounding is incredible. He's got a nose for the ball like nothing else. He's got about 6 passes in his bag, which I'm legitimately like, that's a great pass. Like, that's a genuinely great pass that he has. He has, like, a flip back off of the pick and pop, which is – that's rare to have at that age. There are things where I can see it. I'm just not at the, like, oh, man, he's clearly going to be this transcendent player. Like, look, we're still in a league where if you can't consistently come off the dribble and knock down the jumper, you're going to have problems. Like, that's still going to be a thing. And I think that the conversation with him will even out over time. I've said this for a while now, which is I think his floor is like NBA starting point guard.
Mm-hmm.
His ceiling is like some sort of hybrid Steve Nash and Tyreek Evans, like some sort of weird meld of those two guys. And so
Laker fans who just watched this last Memphis game are thinking to themselves, whoa, Tyreek Evans, we'll take that guy. He was exactly. Incredible.
Right. And so, like, you're talking about a really good player there. So, like, I think over time the conversation about him will mellow. Will mellow. But I think that also I think he's always gonna be divisive because he plays for the Lakers. Lakers fans have a sense of we are special for a lot of reasons, which are valid, some are not. And the media is always going to portray the Lakers differently. Like, Lakers, like, media, LA media treats Lonzo Ball differently than they do other rookies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just, it's just like, he's just discussed differently. And then you throw in the LeVar stuff. And so, like, he has a cult of personality around him that's not even his own personality, it's his dad's. So, mm-hmm. He's always going to be divisive. That's always going to be a thing. But I think in time, we'll have a little bit more of a sense of, like, let's give the kid time for it to play out.
So I do have a counter. I want to talk about his actual basketball talent at this point. We're about midway through the season, almost there. And I've noticed a couple things, especially while he's been out. And while he's been out, has kind of provided a nice little counter to some of the arguments against him, and some of the and it gives some ammunition to people who say he kind of just makes everybody better. And we're going to get to that here in a second. So since Lonzo Ball has been out, the Lakers have been playing a brand of basketball that I can best sum up by calling it vomit. Like, it has just been gross. They aren't getting out in transition the way that they need to. They aren't a very good. They will never this season be a good half court team, and they have somehow gotten worse in the half court, and they're playing more in the half court because they aren't getting out in transition. And so there's kind of two types of thought here, right? You say, this is the actual Lonzo impact as we're seeing it, but the counter to the counter is, well, the guys filling up time for him is Tyler Ennis, Alex Caruso, and Jordan Clarkson, who is not a point guard. So my question to you is, which way would you lean between those two things? Would you say is it mostly the guys who are playing the minutes that are left behind by Lonzo's injury are just that bad? Or would you say that Lonzo does have would you maybe start to admit that he does have some of that impact that Laker fans will point to?
No. No, it's nonsense. This is absolute nonsense. Like, look, the Lakers are 11-22, and they weren't above 500 team when he was around. Like, they are minus 3.5 when he's been on the floor per 100 possessions per NBA.com. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, even with him being out and how bad you said that they played and everything else, even with all of that, right? They were still better when he's not been on the floor. They're a minus 2.5. They're a point better for 100 possessions when he's not on the court. Like, there's no way. You, like, if you're going to throw this nonsense at me, you better have some numbers to back it up. You better have some evidence. You better be able to point to something other than, like, how it feels. Because the other thing is, here's the reality. How has this team won? They didn't win with their offense. They won with their defense. That team was playing unsustainably well, good defensively for the first month of the season.
And Lonzo's a good defender, though.
See, and that's an interesting question, right? We're dealing with the same thing with Tatum, right? Which is, like, when you talk about, like, well, the experts just missed, which everyone loves, right? Especially in 2017 in the age of Trump. Like, everyone just loves.
Or hates the experts, right?
Yeah, like, there's a whole article on the death of expertise, which everyone should read. But here's the thing. Lonzo, if you're talking about, like, the draft experts, you're not talking about one person. You're talking about, like, every single dude that has scouted this kid said, like, oh, he's going to be a bad defender. Like, oh, this is going to be a problem for him. And I think that over time, that's probably actually still going to – we're going to see that. And the reason I think we're going to see that is – teams and scouting reports will get out on what works against them, and teams will start to target him a little bit more. I think what's happening early on was players would try and target him, and they would go out of their own rhythms to do it. And whenever you do that, you're going to lose. The same reason that guys posting up Ryan Anderson don't work. Now, there are things that Lonzo, I think, does really well defensively, and there's some of the same things that Steph Curry does defensively. Like, he attacks the ball. Right, he's able to attack the ball really well. He's got an exceptional nose for the ball that helps him with rebounding, but it also helps him with, like, if the ball is, like, out there in any capacity within his eyesight, he has got great instincts to reach out and grab it. Like, he's just quick. He's got good size, but there's still a matter of lateral quickness, which is going to eventually, I think, limit him. And I think as he probably adds muscle, which is going to be necessary for him, that's going to make it more difficult for him. And we've seen that with other players before. So there's all these ways in which, like, has he been a good defender? I can't say he's been a bad defender. They got a 103.7 defensive rating with him on the court. That's good. It's slowly been sliding upward, and that's okay. But I think that here's the thing is, like, no one thought coming in, like, you don't look at Lonzo Ball and you're not like, oh, he's really going to help you defensively. Like, that's not the MO. So if you're like, well, they've had success because of their defense and Lonzo's been a good defender. Okay, sure. But now you're just rewriting the narrative so that you make sure that Lonzo's good. And again, all I'm saying is, let's be honest. Like, he's played really well as a rookie defensively. Jason Tatum's played really well as a rookie defensively. That's maybe sustainable. It may not be, but we should probably be a little bit patient when something is as much of an outlier against common conception as this has been.
So I would agree. Now, regarding common perception, I think skilled players tend to get knocked defensively a little bit more than is maybe necessarily fair. And with both of those guys, Jason Tatum and Lonzo Ball, those guys are both skilled. And the thinking is, well, if they're skilled, then maybe they're lacking athletically, otherwise you're looking at a tremendous basketball player, right? I think that when I read some draft coverage, I see that a bunch. You see it with shooters that somehow they can't also be athletes. But regarding the last two games, Lonzo has sat out has not played the last two games. And I mean, it's the same numbers are there without him, with or without him, basically. And they are -4 in net rating, although their pace has slowed down, and that the pace slowing down to me is to me, and you're gonna say that I am picking out a stat of many, and it's only a 2-game sample size, but when the Lakers slow down, they just cannot play in the half court. Like, everybody who pays close attention to this team recognizes that they are just terrible in the half court, and that's why they are 11-22 now, is because they get to these close game situations where the game slows down and they can't execute late, and that to me points to the Lonzo stuff. The other thing that I wanted to mention as well. Regarding Lonzo shooting, it feels a lot to me like the conversation that we had about Brandon Ingram last year, where I think it was post All-Star break, he just became a completely different player, right? And people, and this was one of the things coming into the season that I was, I will admit that I was flat out wrong about, but I couldn't ignore the larger sample size that told me that Brandon Ingram is going to have some issues here and there, or may not be a good shooter, or may not be skilled enough to score in the NBA. And I wouldn't say I ignored the smaller sample size, but I leaned more closely to the larger one that told me a little bit more. And then this season, we're seeing that he is the player from the second half of last season. And then you're seeing that same kind of thing going on right go on before Lonzo got hurt, where he was shooting the ball better. And the smaller sample size tells Laker fans something that they want to know or they want to feel. And because that those stats tell them what they want to be told, they're going to ignore the larger sample size that Lonzo Ball is not the kind of shooter that you would like a skilled point guard to be. And I think that's going to remain the case throughout the season. I think he's going to be a streaky shooter, and some stretches are going to tell you one thing and other stretches are going to tell you another, and that's just kind of how this is going to go. But I am really thankful that enough has gone on across the NBA that the conversation about Lonzo has slowly but surely become about his basketball and not about his dad and not about Magic Johnson and the coverage about him. I'd like to focus on his basketball because, in my opinion, he's a thoroughly interesting basketball player.
Yeah, he's interesting. I think he's less interesting if he's in Sacramento, but he is interesting. Something I do want to point out. One, everyone that watched Brandon Ingram in college and then watched him last year, like, I believe in data. I believe in evidence. I said that, and I think you need it. But there is stuff where you're like, so like Gary Harris shot really poorly his rookie season, and there was a legit conversation about, like, well, like, there were people in Denver that were like, I just don't think Gary Harris is a shooter. And I was like, are you insane? Like, watch him. Mm-hmm. Like, watch him in warm-ups. Like, watch that kid's stroke. It's insane. Like, he's going to be a great shooter. He was a good shooter in college. He's going to be good here. Well, Harris is now, like, a really great, efficient shooter. You watch Lonzo Ball shot, and nobody is like, oh, man. Oh, man. You could say, like, what we get to is, like, well, it can work. Okay, fine. It hasn't worked. It's not working. It's been working in the last 10 games. Overall, it has not worked out. And on the eyesight, you're like, no, that is wrong. Do not do that. Why are you doing that? And so, like, that to me is the big difference between them. The other thing is, the warning sign for me is, and again, not warning sign, because he's a rookie and I would expect it. But whenever I see that a guy that's supposed to be good has a negative net rating on versus off, like, if they're worse on the court with him than when he's on the bench, I ask the question, okay, well, what's the factor that's causing that? Is it that he's actually playing badly? Is it the defense? Is it
he's being used?
Is it the way he's being used? Is it the biggest one is it his teammates? Is that the problem? But the problem is that with Lonzo, you would expect that with the starters, the best talent, he would make the starters better. And so they would be better with him on the floor than with him off. The response to that is, well, yeah, but he plays against the opponent starters the most. Now, I don't think that that's fair to Brandon Ingram or any of the other guys that are also playing against starters a lot of the time. But all right, let's even go that far. But if you're a guy who specifically, your MO, if your whole hype machine is built around he makes everybody better, why is it that Brandon Ingram is 2.5 points worse per 100 possessions in net rating when Lonzo Ball's on the court, and it's all offensive? And the same is true for every starter. If you go down the list, every starter and Julius Randle are all worse when Lonzo Ball is on the court. At some point, you look at it and you go, like, okay, well, they're good with these two guys, and they're good with these two guys, and they're good with these two guys, and they're bad when Lonzo's on the court. Now, again, the Lakers are bad overall. Like, they're still in the negative in all these situations anyway, because the Lakers are a bad team. They're a bad young team.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot go with people on the he makes everybody better when specifically the players he should make the best, he makes worse.
So I misspoke a second ago. I forgot to actually run the filters from the last two games that Lonzo has set out. So their pace on the season is 104.08. It dropped down to 97.41. Their net rating on the season is -3.2. In the last two games, it is -16.7. Their offensive rating on the season is, oddly enough, their offense has gotten better. Their offensive rating on the season is 100.9 to 102.9 that it is right now over the last two games.
So,
but their defense.
So what does that tell you?
Well, their defense has fallen. But again, it's like we talked about earlier. Their defense on the season has fallen from.
But you cannot look at that and say, like, oh, the problem with the defense is that Lonzo Ball's not there.
Well, no, even
if you want to say he's good, you can't go that far.
I think a better way to put that is I think the defense has fallen off of a cliff because instead of Lonzo Ball, it's Tyler Ennis. It's Jordan Clarkson. It's Alex Caruso. Like that was the original point that I was trying to make, is that I don't think that this team has been bad because Lonzo Ball is out, because Lonzo is some transcendent star. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that Tyler Ennis is maybe the worst basketball player I've seen in the NBA. And Alex Caruso is right behind him.
You're right on that stuff. Here is kind of an interesting point, though. So you talked about the pace, right? Which Kerr mentioned that. Kerr's like, he's got a really great feel for tempo. Like, he gets them up and gets them into their sets. Like, I love the way that he plays with tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really great. I agree. Like, that stuff is awesome. I'm legitimately saying that. And, like, you can tell that that's a factor. Now, there's a difference between tempo and fast. Like, you can play up tempo. The Spurs always play up tempo, which that sounds crazy because the Spurs have one of the slowest paces in the league. What that means is Tony Parker makes sure that they're initiating their sets with 19 seconds left on the shot clock, which means San Antonio has time to go through options 1, 2, and 3 in order to find the shot that they want. It may take them all 19 seconds, but they have 19 seconds to work with. John Wall, as much as I love him as a player, has horrible tempo. John Wall gets their sets initiating at 16:15 seconds, which means that the Wizards are constantly running out of time to find the shots that they need to find. So Lonzo's really good there. However, you cited pace, and a natural component of pace is playing fast and in transition. That's like a natural part of it. And we know that the Lakers, like, going in, like, Walton wanted to run. That was the whole thing in preseason. Run. So transition, I think, is probably an interesting thing to look at here. And you're right that the pace does go up when Lonzo Ball is on the court. However, this stat is notable to me. Amongst all players in transition, counting shots, drawn fouls, turnovers, and assists via Synergy Sports, with Lonzo Ball in possession of the ball in any of those sequences, they score at 1.2 points per possession in transition, which is good for 26th percentile mm-hmm. in the league, which is horrible. So effectively what you have is you have a player that plays fast but also isn't effective at it. So the one thing that you would kind of want to, like, tilt towards, they're not actually doing well with in regards to what Lonzo's actually doing. That seems notable to put in the context as well.
Yep. And like I said, what interests me greatly about Lonzo Ball is that a lot of these stats, like, you have to use all of them in proper context. And to the point that you were making there, even as you were speaking, the thing that popped up in my mind is KCP receiving some of these passes and just driving with his head down into two or three defenders, or pulling up for some pull-up jumper because Rich Paul is his agent and Magic Johnson doesn't want to piss him off and tell him that he shouldn't have that shot as an option.
Right.
Speaking of agents, and I could talk about Lonzo Ball almost till the cows come home, because, like I said, talking about him as a basketball player is really interesting. But speaking of agents, Eric Pincus has gone on a couple podcasts, one being his own, one being Lakers Nation, and kind of mentioned or pontificated that potentially the way Julius Randle is being handled may or may not have something to do with the fact that Aaron Mintz is his agent. And when you compare that to how Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has been handled and his being the same agent as LeBron James, that maybe the Lakers are trying to do whatever they possibly can to continue to convince Rich Paul to maybe send LeBron out this way. Whereas maybe Aaron Mintz is thinking, the rumors out there say that Paul George would be coming to the Lakers regardless of what Aaron Mintz has to say to him. To me, I think that's thinking a little too deeply about it, but Julius Randle isn't playing enough. everybody knows it. From where you've been sitting, because obviously I pay way too close attention to this team, but from where you've been sitting, how is this going over maybe across the league that the rest of the NBA is saying, like, this guy's your most impactful player, and the last two games at least he's played under 20 minutes. That just seems mind-boggling, right?
Nobody gets it. So I've learned to be cautious about this because, like, we killed Byron. Mm-hmm. We all killed Byron for what happened with D'Angelo.
I'm not even allowed to mention his name on this podcast because I get fined because of how often I was killing Byron Scott. Dang it. Harrison isn't here. That doesn't count.
And yet, you know, Pincus had said during that entire ordeal, he had suggested, like, look, D'Angelo's doing some of this. Like, D'Angelo's the one creating some of these problems. And no one wanted to believe it because we all like this, the idea of, like, we love the idea of the young prospect. It takes a while for them to become players. And then we realize, like, oh, like, they have an attitude, or they are this, or they are, you know, they have these flaws, which are human and natural. And D'Angelo still probably got a raw deal. But D'Angelo also clearly has an attitude. Like, both things can be true at the same time.
Absolutely.
And so with Julius, I'm always hesitant. But my thing is just, like, I don't know, man. Like, you're a team in this position, and you get a guy that works his ass off the way that Randall does. Like, there's just zero quitting that guy. I think it's hard. Like, I would – the only thing I can imagine is that he just must be one of those guys who's just horrible in practice. Because I've run across those guys, and I've talked to coaches where they're just like, he doesn't show up. Like, he just doesn't show up in practice. Like, he's there in practice, but he's not actually checked in. He doesn't give effort, and he's like, if I can't count on you, how do I know you're going to do it in a game? And the reality is that they're just two different worlds. And once you build yourself into a superstar, you get to just screw around at practice. But even then, I've got no proof that Randall's that kind of player. It just seems bizarre to me that this is how they've taken this approach. Like, if you're not going to keep him, play him so you can trade him and get more assets to help augment this team that you're planning on building with LeBron and Paul George and Russell Westbrook and the robotic ghost of Wilt Chamberlain and whoever else. Like, use that to your advantage because you don't have enough good players for you to screw around with this. Kuzma's awesome. Kuzma's a legitimate Rookie of the Year candidate. But there's room for Randall to play more. And I've been upset this since preseason when it was, oh, no, they told Randall, don't push the ball in transition. Get it to Lonzo. That's insulting to what Julius Randle. Like, Julius Randle came back from a major leg injury and busted his ass to come back and be a good player. And Randall is honestly, he's exceeding expectations that I had defensively. I talked to a Lakers scout this summer, and he was like, watch out for Julius Randle defensively. The kid's put in work on that end. Like, he's actually spent his summer working on defense. And it's there. Like, are there still times when he's bad? Yes. You know why? Because the Lakers are a bad team. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of potential there for Julius Randle to be an impact kind of guy. And they should be 100% supporting him and hoping that he becomes what he's capable of. And I like Luke Walton and think he's going to be a good coach, but I do not get this at all. And it's baffling, I think, to everybody that watches and goes, like, wow, Julius Randle's really good. For him to be buried and not playing as much as he needs to be, this team is just awarding minutes based off of the most random nonsense, and it's really, I think, frustrating. I would be very frustrated if I was a Lakers fan.
Well, I thought you were going to go with, I would be frustrated if I was Julius Randle, because what you're starting to see over the last couple games, and it really, really annoys me because you're starting to see it from the beat reporters, is, well, Randle wasn't that good, and they're kind of letting Luke Walton off of the schneid because, well, Randall wasn't that good and we just went with somebody who was better. And Randall is, he's evidently starting to sulk in the same ways that D'Angelo was starting to sulk under the previous coach. And what is going to, I tweeted this out the other night. I do not want to hear a single report about this kid not working hard enough because he transformed his body completely. We all laugh at Muscle Watch 2016, 2017, next year will be 2018. That we all kind of chuckle at that in the offseason. But Julius Randle was legitimately ripped. Came into the season legitimately ripped. He was working out in back alleys and stuff for some wild reason because he wanted to be Rocky from Rocky IV or whatever it was. And he came in and, like you said, I can't think of very many players, and it's only a one possession sample size, but I can't think of very many players that in the same game can have Steph Curry in front of them and can have Kevin Durant in front of them, and both times forced tough shots from both of them, and both and they were both misses. They were both he induced misses twice. He's had he got roasted by James Harden in one game, but over the course of the season, he's doing things defensively that for me I'm banging my head up against the wall, because I'm like, you want that on your team in the positionless NBA, you need that kind of defender on your team. And the Lakers are just like, no, we'll try to lower his qualifying offer and we'll see what we can possibly get away with this coming offseason if we don't piss him off too much. And it's just, it's tough to watch. And I always come back to, and I'll let you maybe shoot me down on this theory, but if there's a problem and it's so illogical, then it's senseless to use logic to try to explain it. And you got to kind of maybe look at other things. Maybe Luke Walton is just not good at this. Maybe he has walking orders coming from on high that he's not part of the future anyway. See what you can do with Nance. See what you can do with Kuzma, et cetera, et cetera. But just to continue to think, well, the rotation just isn't working out, feels kind of naive.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I think that we're at a point where you've got to believe that there's something going on, which is more than just a play factor. And that could be just like the coach just doesn't like him. And that's part of the thing that I think gets missed a lot when we talk about like this stuff, is sometimes coaches just don't like players. And we tend to make it more complicated than it needs to be. Like, sometimes it really is as simple as, you know, he just doesn't think he's that good. Like, just doesn't think that he's that good. And that's – the coach has the authority to do that. So, you know, I think that it's possible that there's some sort of logic going on, or that there's another factor, or the agent stuff or whatever. But it's also possible that just, like, you know what? Luke Walton just doesn't think he's that good. Like, that's just the end of it. And that's weird to think about, but it's also possible.
That – makes me really nervous, because on two levels. One, maybe Luke Walton isn't very good at understanding talent and important talent in the NBA, or two, his assistant coaches are not doing their jobs, because that's where an assistant coach, especially if he had like a, if say Brian Shaw is the kind of veteran assistant coach on the staff, at some point you need somebody to step up and challenge your head coach. That's to me, that's what separates the Popoviches, the Kerrs, and even the Jacksons, is that they had those assistant coaches who would call them on their crap if they were being dumb, and they challenged themselves in that way. I'm not necessarily Luke Walton has done that thus far with the group of frat bros from Arizona that he's assembled around him.
Yeah, I think that's worth being concerned about. You know, I'm like, look, you know, part of this is like what happens, right, with young coaches, is like there's growing pains with young coaches, and we don't really like to think about that, because, you know, we just tend to think of like how it's like good coaches are good coaches. But even Brad Stevens, like, there's a learning curve, and so he's going to have to learn some of the stuff that he's got to figure out, and, you know, it'll be a question of whether or not he can get through those kind of things. And he may learn from this experience, and he and Randall may get the stuff sorted out too. Like, that's possible. But, you know, I do think it's concerning that that Randall, which was such a valuable asset for them, has just been kind of, I think, limited. And again, I go back to like has the kid put in the work? Like, it's pretty clear he has. And I don't know that you want to go this way with, you know, with treating a player that's put in the work like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't send a very good message.
Right.
All right. Well, this was a ton of fun. I looked down at the clock and I was shocked at how long we've been talking. I thank you very much for battling through a frog stuck in your throat, for joining us on this night. And one day Harrison will face you like the man you are and the man he isn't.
Well, I hope he'll finally, you know, finally, I don't know, not be a coward. I don't know. Face me.
Again, that is Matt Moore of Hardwood Paroxysm, and now of the Action Network, actionnetwork.com at Action Network HQ. Again, man, I wanted to say, and I've said it a few times, and I'll repeat it till I run out of breath or my voice sounds like yours. Thank you for everything that you've done for the blogosphere, and we're all pulling for this thing to work.
It's really humbling how nice everyone's been about it. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Anytime. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll be back at it again on either Monday or Tuesday. We'll see how New Year's goes.